Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my co-host, my friend Parker Fleming. Parker, how's it going on this fine Wednesday evening?
Grant, it's going great. Look, I won't reveal mystery secret mountain location, but we got snow this week, man. There's snow on the mountains. It's winter is here. It's happening. I know people have fall in other places, but it's winter here.
No, what, that is awesome. Did you go snowshoeing across the Great Plains? What was your winter activity?
So can I tell you something about snowshoeing? It sucks. It's like a workout. It's not fun. Or like cross-country skiing, it's just like hard walking. It's not fun. It's not something I enjoy at all, and I don't do it recreationally. I basically just burrow. I'm just digging a hole in my backyard, and I'm going to live in a hobbit hole starting about the beginning of December.
Have you ever lived in a place with a basement? Because I've thought about this for like the last couple of weeks. It's gotten a little bit colder down here in South Texas. I would love to have a basement with like, hey, I can curl up with, you know, a glass of whiskey, watch the game in a warm flannel in a fire burning.
Yes. So basements here are very cold. And so I had a basement and I would go do like a little high intensity calisthenics workout at like 5 a.m. in the morning when I was like 22 and super... super invested in my health and being a crazy person, but I don't live in basements. We don't have a basement now, and they're just very cold. So I like that idea. I do think we're gonna buy one of those. This might be cheese ball. It's like an electric fireplace thing. So you plug it in, and it has like fake flames and everything. It just creates the ambiance because in where we live, there's air quality restrictions, and it's very expensive to. Have an actual fireplace, and our house doesn't have an actual fireplace in it. So we thought we want the ambiance of like the winter fireplace without necessarily having a winter fireplace.
I have an electric fireplace in my house here. Also, this is a surprise for all of our listeners who think that we both respectively podcast from our own mother's basements. We actually do not. Neither of us live in a house with a basement. So there you go. I podcast from an office.
Yeah, I have my own room. I have lights. Look at this. This is official. I'm not using my good camera right now, so Grant's judging me, but I'm still.
We have nothing to talk about heading into this week, as you can tell. Look, TCU 7-0. They're ranked number 7 in the country. We're not going to get bent out of shape about the AP poll and being behind Alabama. This is just another game week for TCU. Parker, if it's okay with you, I'm ready to just get into West Virginia.
I honestly don't even have banter. Well, I guess we just did banter, but yeah, like there's no storylines I'm worried about. Like I'm at the point now, I'm locking in, I'm getting a little vicious, and I'm like, dude, let's just freaking win. And Grant, West Virginia comes to town, and can I tell you something about West Virginia's defense? It stinks.
Yeah. Is it bad?
They had a really real bad week. And I'm talking about the athletes. I'm not making fun of 18-year-old athletes on the field. I'm talking the way that they have organized and the way that they're executing is so bad. We'll get into that side of the ball, I think, deeply and talk about some of the clips we saw. But a very interesting matchup this weekend. TCU as a ranked team heads to Morgantown. Grant. TCU 0-6 against the spread against West Virginia in the last six games. They're 4-6 in the 10 games straight up since they joined the Big 12. Gary Patterson has not beaten never beat Neil Brown. Didn't do it.
No, TCU's 0-4 in the last four games against West Virginia. One of those, which we talk about on this podcast often, is the worst game either of us have ever been to in 2019 when TCU needed to win to make a bowl and instead decided to lay down and play dead.
And it was supposed to rain, and then it just got hot. So we were all wearing our rain gear, and we were sweaty and disgusting. Oh, it was awful. I was so unhappy.
Just the absolute worst. I dread seeing West Virginia's name on the schedule every year just because memories of that game come flooding back. But yeah, West Virginia's been the bugaboo in TCU's side for nigh on a decade.
Yeah, they've absolutely had TCU's number here, especially as of late. But an interesting kind of turning of tides this week. West Virginia, they're 3-4 this season. Overall, Grant, they're 49th in EPA per play out of the 65 Power 5 teams, 29th in offense, 57th in defense. They're averaging just under 35 points per game. Grant, they're allowing 33.7 points per game. That's not very good. For reference, TCU 12th overall, 13th on offense, 38th on defense. TCU's averaging 44.3 points per game. I can't believe that's a real statement. And TCU's only allowing 26.7 points per game. So two different teams. And before we get into the sides, Grant, I'm going to say there's some discontent in West Virginia.
Yeah, I think both of us were on West Virginia podcast this week, and I know I had conversations with the host of the Voice of the Mountaineers podcast, you know, during recording and after. Neil Brown appears to have worn out his welcome in Morgantown. I think every person there agrees he's a nice guy and they like him, but he has not delivered on the promise that was expected of him when he joined West Virginia from Troy. It's just been kind of a lame tenure. At least with Dana Holgorsen, it was exciting and weird. Neil Brown's just been boring and kind of middling to bad. I think everyone's kind of ready to see him go.
If you're going to be bad, don't be boring, I think is really the issue here. Yeah. And I'm scrolling as we do this because I'm never prepared and never have what I want. Here it is. Mike Asti, who is a West Virginia journalist to some extent, he and I DM'd a little bit because he tweeted about Tony Mathis, the running back, being out, and then tweeted, why are TCU fans in my mentions being sarcastic about this? Like, I don't understand. And so I DM'd him and said, hey, sorry, here's what's going on. And we chatted a little bit, but he had this tweet. He said, there's a sad aspect of it not working out with Neil Brown at West Virginia. Everyone wanted it to work. He came in as a young coach who fit culturally. He ingratiated himself to fans, media, and past greats of the program, many who hadn't felt welcome. But it's a results-based business. And the results, Grant, have not been good under Neil Brown.
No, I don't think West Virginia's won more than, what, 7 games in his tenure? I'm pulling that up now. But he ran a pretty interesting system at Troy, and it hasn't really translated. Some of the hires that he's made have not worked out well as coordinators. And then you bring in JT Daniels as a transfer quarterback, and that's fun. But, this year he's not really living up to expectations. West Virginia's been 5-7, 6-4, 6-7, and now 3-4 under Neil Brown. So 2 6-win seasons. Just for, perspective, I think they made a BCS bowl at least once under him, and they had a couple more 9-10-win seasons. So definitely a downgrade with Neil Brown coming in, which I didn't expect. I was super happy when he got the job. I thought he was going to do really well at West Virginia, but just kind of lackluster.
West Virginia made a bowl every year from 2002. To 2012, and then 2013 was Dana Holgorsen's 4-8 year, and then they made a bowl 5 straight years, and then Neil Brown didn't make a bowl his first year, and then they went Liberty Bowl guaranteed rate. So definitely a program that's had a long run of success, Grant. I think the definition of success at West Virginia is very different. I talked to a really good friend this week who's a West Virginia guy, and he was just kind of talking about how sad it is that fans aren't as invested this year. He said that Thursday night game for Baylor was in the 40,000s of attendance, which is very low for them, and how at West Virginia, they don't expect you to win the national title. They expect you once every 3 years to have a pretty dang good team and to have fun, but also kind of have this hating-ass West Virginia identity. And it really feels like Neil Brown, through some turnovers, through some personnel stuff, I don't think we need to talk about it at all with his defensive coordinator, Vic Caning, has just not been able to kind of cultivate that hating-ass West Virginia attitude. You can still lose in Morgantown. Baylor showed that, although Blake Shapen got hurt. That really helped a lot of it. But it really does feel like this identity that Neil Brown is trying to create is not one that he can create or has been able to create so far.
Yeah, I'm going to correct myself real quick, and then I'm going to have a really great transition into this current West Virginia team. Dana did make a BCS bowl. That was before Dana's tenure. Please do not tweet me. I've corrected myself. Now, here is a great transition. I'm trying to figure out what identity this West Virginia team is supposed to have, because I'm looking at a website called cfbgraphs.com. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Vaguely.
But there are a couple of stats here. West Virginia's EPA margin, for example. Offensive success rate, they're 39th, fine. 116th overall in defense against, excuse me. Yeah, yeah. So they, I don't know what they're trying to be. Net points per drive, or excuse me, defense success rate, 127th against the pass, 86th against the rush. On offense, they're 23rd passing, 62nd rushing. I don't know what they want to be good at. I guess JT Daniels throwing, but on defense, they're not good at anything, and they're not elite at passing. So I'm not sure what they want this team to be.
Yeah, again, really big split here. And even if they were going to kind of be an air raid-y offense, they're really not aggressive enough in the past to be that kind of air raid, like, you know, score 60 and push you to the brink every time kind of an offense. They rush, you know, 5.4% less than the average team. That's 31st in the nation. That's certainly a far cry from like a Mike Leach team or even, you know, a Texas Tech or even a TCU in terms of aggressiveness in the pass game. And yeah, it just seems a little weird, kind of unsettling. It feels like, I mean, they have lost. They lost Akeem Mesidor, an amazing defensive lineman. And he just is gone to Miami. They lost Tyke Smith, won Big 12 Freshman of the Year, and then friggin' bounced. Didn't even start at Georgia. There are guys who are transferring out of West Virginia to go be backups elsewhere. And that, I think, says a lot about West Virginia generally, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Grant, well, I'll let you pick offense or defense kind of where we start, but I will say just before I looked this up, because I was a little interested in kind of the where does West Virginia rank amongst teams that TCU has played?
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia would be the fifth best P5 team TCU has played in terms of EPA per play margin. Colorado is only the only one that's worse. They're 65th. They're the fifth best P5 defense that TCU has played so far. Colorado is 64th. They're worse than them. And they're the fourth best P5 offense that TCU has played. Kansas State is 41st and Colorado's 64th compared to West Virginia's 29th. So TCU has played better defenses and better offenses than West Virginia this season so far.
My main takeaway from that is that Colorado is really bad at football. But yes, West Virginia's go ahead.
I would take the Colorado job. I would also hire Ryan Walters, the defensive coordinator from Illinois, and just be like, dude, we'll give you whatever you want and we'll give you all the resources. Come out here and be awesome and let's win the Pac-12.
I think Colorado should hire Brett Bielema, because I want to see Brett with like 3 years in Boulder, like living the granola life just see what happens to him.
He would replace Ralphie. He would just be the Buffalo. They would just make him run around the stadium beforehand. That got a little personal. I apologize, Mr. Bielema. I apologize. I don't. I was an Arkansas fan while you were there, and I'm mad at you, so I don't apologize to that. Grant, you want to talk about the offense?
Let's talk about the offense.
Okay, offense.
Let's talk about the offense. It's Graham Harrell, and he's trying to run some sort of odd hybrid air raid BS that really just turns into like a pistol. I don't know what the hell he's trying to do. I've watched several games of West Virginia, and I don't know what the plan is.
It does feel a little bit like last year we complained about how Sonny Cumbie was, or I guess that was 2 years ago because we were free of him last year. But it was just like, hey, you've got a lot of decent plays, but you're not sequencing them at all. You're just pulling them out of a grab bag.
Yeah.
And running whatever one it is. And I'm all for randomization, Grant. I love good randomization, but maybe tweak the algorithm a little bit. This offseason, you know, they had some significant differences from 2021. Graham Harrell advertised a 3-day install. So the air raid is kind of like the Remember the Titans offense, where it's like, hey, 7 plays, just like Novocaine, give it time, it always works. And that's kind of the deal, is we're going to run these like very simple plays and run them over and over again. But Graham Harrell especially emphasized, which is weird given what he's done in the past, to win at a really high level, you have to be able to run the football. They can't really run the football. And so that,
no,
and they're not winning at a high level. So, I mean, in one logical sense, he's right.
He's 100% right. And it's funny because I think they do some interesting things when they try to run. They pull a lot, especially at a pistol. They run a lot of motion. They, you know, kind of try to switch things up. I think Graham Harrell saw a lot of clips of like Lance Leipold or Lincoln Riley and said, oh, great, we're going to do this, but didn't actually study any of the playbooks or learn any of the fundamentals. He just kind of threw a bunch of spare parts together and said, hey, this is a running offense. Turns out it isn't. Despite the fact that West Virginia actually has good running backs, although one they're actually kind of down to one this week because Tony Mathis is out. It's just going to be C.J. Donaldson.
Who's back from a pretty gruesome concussion earlier yeah. this season. So that's good for him. But yeah. also, he hasn't been super involved, and Mathis has kind of been the guy. And that's going to be some issue. Yeah, there's going to be some issues.
Yeah. I don't know what this offense wants to be. I don't know what JT Daniels is supposed to be. He's certainly not a runner, God bless him. He's a pocket passer. But he's also not that good at pocket passing. I don't know, man.
So I like JT Daniels. I have a soft spot for West Virginia quarterbacks, as one knows. But I think generally the idea with JT Daniels is that you're bringing in a guy who has elite ability to put the ball in the right spot and has really good processing kind of decision-making because you're going to go air raid 1-2 read very quick. Like, hey, I'm either hitting this guy or I'm hitting this guy or I'm throwing it to the running back out of the backfield. Like, that's what they're doing here. He's at 63.8% completion, Grant. He is at 71.7% adjusted completion percentage. We've talked about this for years with West Virginia. I don't know what it is in the water. I think part of it is just Bryce Ford-Wheaton, kind of this is in his DNA. 7.4% drops. That's not good. That's not very good. JT Daniels also feels like he's pressing a little bit. His average depth of target is only 8.8. But Grant, 3.3% big time throw rate compared to 3.5% turnover worthy play rate. So 10 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. But when you kind of look at those in expectation, kind of big time throw to turnover worthy play, it feels like he's forcing things a little bit more than he needs to, and that's kind of hampering the offense overall.
Yeah, those 6 picks stand out to me for a guy that's supposed to have that sort of processing. You don't throw 6 picks in, 7 games if you're an elite yeah. processor.
I mean, last week against Texas Tech, he threw a stupid ball into the end zone that Texas Tech intercepted that West Virginia was looking to go down 17-10 at halftime. That's an entirely different game, and it was just over. He threw a pick, and it was over.
Yeah. Yeah, and under pressure, he's not good. When the pocket's clean, 7.1 yards per attempt, 9 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. When he's under pressure, 4.7 yards per attempt, 1 TD, 2 picks, and a completion percentage of only 38.5%. So if you get into the backfield, he does not have that sort of decision-making that you would expect of a guy that was arguably like maybe the one of the top 5 like highest rated QB prospects out of high school and certainly an experienced guy.
I mean, he was a legit 5-star.
I saw something the other day. Like, he was the quarterback of maybe the best high school team in history out there in California and just hasn't really translated.
Yeah, well, he had some injury luck and everything and development matters.
He did, for sure, for sure.
But they're...
Absolutely.
I mean,
it's just...
They're 34th in EPA per play on pass, but they're 23rd in passing success rate. So it seems like they can get the ball kind of short, and we'll talk about the receivers here in a second that can do that. But really no kind of explosive ceiling from this. I mean, very low explosive ceiling from this offense. Grant, they're 16th in echo rate, quality possession rate, but they're 62nd in points per echo. So they're just like not finishing drives. Last week against Texas Tech, I'm not even going to read it because you guys have seen it on Twitter. That's fine. You can go look at it. They had 5 first downs inside the Texas Tech 40. 4 of those were inside the Texas Tech 30, and they came away with 10 total points. That's pathetic. That is awful.
It's not good, Parker. It's really not good.
It's real bad.
And again, you get to the point where it's like, okay, it's a new system under Graham Harrell. It's his first year as OC there. But at some point, like, we're 7 games into the season, man. Like, those are week 1 mistakes, not week 7 mistakes.
Yeah. And what's scary about that, I think, against a TCU defense that's 95th in EPA per pass right now and 43rd in EPA per rush, is that TCU's defense has been shown to be, like, exploitable a little bit in the pass game. And West Virginia is, like, moving the ball. They're just blowing it at some point. Like, at some point, something happens. Well, I would say if this is the 2021 TCU defense, I'd be a little bit more worried about that because there was not really as many ball hawks there. But the 2022 defense is a little bit more aggressive, I think, against in those situations. And it helps that West Virginia is 115th in field position. So, like, they're going to be starting far back. They really haven't had a good special teams game. And so if TCU can kind of force him to go the length of drive, you're just like, hey, you're going to get yours. That's fine. I'm going to make sure that you don't get the big play touchdown, and then you're going to mess it up. You're going to make a mistake. And that's kind of the push here, especially with Mathis out. And I mean, Grant, do you remember what Letty Brown did to TCU last year?
Yes, of course I remember, Parker. I mean, no matter how much I've tried to forget.
It's absolutely absurd that TCU gave up that huge rushing performance. And so that this year, if they can take the rushing floor out of West Virginia, force them to win through the air, I think TCU has a little bit of, better of a shot here.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the receivers for a minute. So Bryce Ford Wheaton obviously is the guy, right? 45 receptions on 72 targets, 11.5 yards per reception, 5 touchdowns. Does have a little bit of a drop problem. He's got 4 drops, but averages 4.5 yards after reception on an ADOT of 11.7. So he's a deep threat. He can also catch the ball and run. He is a really good wide receiver when Daniels manages to get the ball his way. You also have Caden Prather. Those are the sort of the two outside guys. Prather's also very, very good. And then Sam James lines up over the slot. 13.8 yards per reception, 2 TDs for him. Interesting enough, no receiver has, right, I guess I should say only Bryce Ford Wheaton and Sam James have catches over 33 yards this year. So not a lot of big play potential from Prather, Reese Smith, Jeremiah Aaron, guys like that. But Sam James and Bryce Ford Wheaton sort of have that explosiveness that maybe the other guys don't.
Bryce Ford Wheaton, Grant, has 72 total targets. 25 of those are contested. They are forcing him the ball. 4 of JT Daniels' interceptions, Grant, were when they were targeting Bryce Ford Wheaton. They are absolutely coming after him. And an interesting shift from last year, 79% of his passes are less than 20 yards downfield. That's very different from last year, where almost a third of his passes were 20 yards downfield. They're trying to get him the ball shorter. They're trying to make the offense run through him. But that also means that JT Daniels is absolutely forcing him the ball as the number one receiver. He has a career drop percentage of 11.3. It's gotten better a little bit in recent years, but this season, Grant, 8.2% of passes that have been thrown his way, he's dropped. That's very, very rough. Also, on 50-50 balls, he's just 56%. So not exactly amazing there either. A good weapon, a dangerous weapon, someone who can absolutely punish you. But think about the Pitt game. If he catches a post in the end zone that just goes through his hands, West Virginia probably beat Pitt. They probably beat Pitt.
He's Quentin Johnston without the spectacular catch potential. Like, he's big, he's fast, but he has a kind of a hands problem, and he's just not going to catch those 50-50 balls that QJ would.
Yeah, I think that's
fair.
I think that's fair. It's like he's big and athletic and physical, and but does have some issues in separation, does have some issues in yards after the catch. 27.3% target share, Grant. 2.15 yards per route run. That leads the team. That's not very good. 3 is kind of the standard for hey, you're a productive receiver. He, whether that's drops, whether that's missed targets or whatever, he just hasn't been able to be that productive overall. He and Prather are kind of the outside guys. Prather's at 1.96 yards per route run. So again, both of them are kind of in the same stratosphere there overall. Interesting that James and then Smith is kind of that secondary guy that are both similar to Prather in average depth of target, but they both line up in the slot. Think about mesh, think about cross. Those guys are doing that. They're getting involved. They have 24% of team targets, but 29% of team yards. So they're a little more productive with those targets as those tertiary options. But it seems like just looking at the distribution of targets, they haven't gotten them the ball very much overall. So I would say four legitimate weapons. One that I'm scared of, one that's productive. So one, Bryce Ford Wheaton, kind of scared of. One that's productive, Caden Prather. And then two that are a little bit more annoying than anything else in James and Smith in the slot there, which is good. That's a good quality for a slot guy, is to be annoying.
Yeah. No, I am very prepared to strongly dislike Sam James after this game. If I had to pick a guy where it's like, golly, how does he keep getting 11-yard catches? That would be Sam James, lined up against whoever TCU decides to put on.
Yeah, that's...
That's... TCU has actually, I think, done a pretty decent job of locking down opponents' number one receivers this year, but it's those second and tertiary guys that I think have kind of played a big role. I mean, Malik Knowles, for example, didn't have a great game last week, but Cade Warner was the guy that decimated TCU.
Yeah, it's when Josh Foster and Mark Perry have to get involved in the pass game.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, once you ask those guys to cover instead of run support, it's like, oh boy, I don't yeah. necessarily like that.
Great in run support. Mark Perry has been so good in the run game.
I love Mark Perry.
But yeah, if he gets isolated, that's not great. So yeah, so four legitimate options. Interesting enough, not really a tight end, Grant. They pull in number 88 sometimes. I forget his name. And But he's been involved some, but he's not running a route on a ton of his games. He's pass blocking.
It's Brian Pelendi.
Pelendi, yeah. He's pass blocking a lot. So he's not really a threat in the pass game. I think the wide receivers total have less than 20 targets between the three of them. The tight ends, sorry, have less than 20 targets between the three of them. So no real tight ends to speak of. And out of the backfield, nothing to be said of the running backs in the pass game, which for an air raid team, Grant, the wheel's always open. And so interesting that they really aren't attacking that. That speaks to what you were saying earlier about Harrell being a little funky and kind of what he's doing.
Yeah, Donaldson and Mathis have a combined 15 targets. It's really interesting that they're not getting them involved more. If you want to talk about running backs real quick, like we said, Mathis is out. It's going to be the CJ Donaldson show. He's been pretty effective, 6.2 yards per attempt, 6 TDs. 4.69 yards after contact, Parker. So he's a hard guy to bring down. He's not, a Deuce Vaughn or an elite threat, but he is a running back TC will have to account for, at least, and keep the defense honest.
Yeah, and he's been limited some by an injury and all that. But, I mean, he had 15 snaps, 12 attempts last week against Texas Tech, 2.8 yards per rush.
It's not great last week, admittedly.
Not a deal. And granted, that Texas Tech defensive line, Grant, we've been talking about that since the summer. They're better than people think. That's a fierce defensive unit. But Tony Mathis has 33 of the team's 76 rushing first downs. That's 43.4%. And he has 31.3% of the team rushing touchdowns. So losing him is a big freaking deal. And, I mean, he couldn't get going last week at all. But without him, it gets thin very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's just remember the name CJ Donaldson and nothing else, because that's who's going to be toting the rock for West Virginia.
Yeah, he's going to get 30 carries or something. Interesting to note, stylistically, Grant, 16 rush touchdowns, 12 pass touchdowns for West Virginia this year.
Huh, that is interesting, especially for an air raid quote-unquote team.
Yeah. Well, I think that speaks to lack of explosive passing game, right? They can't punch it in.
Yeah.
And so they've got to do it with the run game. But interesting, yeah. I have some notes on the offensive line, an offensive line that I think played better last year towards the end of the year. JT Daniels pressured on 24.1% of dropbacks. He's blitzed 29.1% of the time. He has a 2.42 average time to throw, but on pressure, it's 3.16. So really the only time they're pressured is when he's taking too long to get the ball out, to get the routes developing downfield. Gemeiter at guard has given up 10 pressures. The rest of the line is tied with 9. So it's kind of evenly distributed. It's not like there's a really weak link. But one thing that really stood out, Grant, only 5 pass block penalties all year for this unit and only 4 run block penalties. So that to me speaks like, hey, you've got some vets. You've got all 5 guys played here last year. And they're not getting beat to the point where they're making desperate plays and having to hold to make their blocks. It seems like they're actually a pretty solid unit.
Yeah, that stability is key. Like you said, all 5 starters return from next year. Doug Nestor is pretty solid at guard. Zach Frazier at center. Milam at tackle. James Gemeiter at guard. Then Jaquay Hubbard and Brandon Yates are kind of split in the tackle position. So 5 guys back. It's a good unit, man. JT Daniels has been protected. Like you said, he just holds on to the ball a little too long. Not that TCU fans are familiar with that or anything from Max Duggan. Certainly not a common problem.
Many people are saying that JT Daniels is just the poor man's Max Duggan.
The homeless man's Max Duggan.
Because I looked this up, West Virginia's offensive line averages 312.5 pounds. TCU's defensive line averages 291.7.
Those are some big old boys.
That's a lot of beef.
Up front.
That's a lot of beef.
That's a lot of beef. I like that you called it points. I'm going to start thinking of pounds as points from now on. It's going to make me feel a lot better when I look at myself in the mirror in the morning.
It's definitely weighed up for TCU because Demonic Williams is 320 pounds. He's a freak. I love him. He's a freak.
Someone has to bring the average up. Parker, let's talk about the West Virginia defense. Okay, let's get some like not priors, but just skiing out of the way. We talked about how weirdly they align. I watched a lot of the Baylor game, a lot of the Texas Tech game. It looks so they run like a hybrid 3-4, 3-3-5 with that kind of three down and then the you know the stand up edge rusher kind of hovering around, or they drop back into a standard 3-3-5. But Parker, it almost looks like they're running like a cover one prevent at times. It blows my mind.
Yeah, so
I don't get it.
There was definitely Neil Brown's press conference. Like, if you're bored at work, you know, you're hearing this on Thursday or Friday, go back and find Neil Brown's press conference, because it was very much like, what's his name? Is it Kevin Bacon? I think it's Kevin Bacon at the end of the Blues Brothers, where he plays the cop and there's like the riot and he's like, remain calm. Remain calm.
No, it's Kevin Bacon, but it's Animal House.
Animal House. Yes, exactly. Yes. And he's like, remain calm. Yes. And that's kind of what Neil Brown sounded like, where it was like, dude, there was some real issues with what you did and how you lined up and how your guys were lining up. And he specifically was saying like, we didn't have issues of lining up. And it's like, my brother, you're running like prevent on 3rd and 2. I don't, there had to be, if there weren't some issues, we have some, we got to talk about some other stuff, but they're 126th in EPA per pass allowed, Grant. That's not good against TCU's 12th best EPA per pass offense, 54th against the rush in terms of success rate, Grant, 122nd in defensive success rate. They are allowing a successful play on 3rd and 4th down 48.72% of the time. That is 115th worst in the nation. And cherry on top, they're 119th in early downs EPA allowed. This is an awful defense. This is a defense that's worse than you think it is, even when you think it's bad.
Can I give you a stat of West Virginia's top 8 tacklers? All 8 have a missed tackle percentage over 10%.
That is not great.
They do not know how to tackle. Now, this does not include Dante Stills, who is a king. Although he only has 8 tackles and 14.3.
Yeah, but he's playing the
missed tackle percentage, but he has 18 pressures.
He's playing.
Yeah, no, he's. We love Dante Stills. He's got 18 pressures. He's by far the best player on this defense. But West Virginia's like actual players can't tackle. It's not good.
65 total missed tackles. The safeties, Burks and Floyd, are 2nd and 3rd in team tackles, but they're both first, tied with 7 in missed tackles. 91 total pressures. I think that's really good for a 3-3-5. They get some of those linebackers involved.
Sure.
The linchpin for me, the guy that kind of stuck out, I'm gonna take a risk here. I don't know. I watch the games on mute. I don't know. Lee Kapogba? So I'm going to say it. I'm going to say Kapogba.
Yeah.
He is kind of, in Big 12 defenses, in flyover defenses now, we're seeing this dude, this guy, this Jalen Petrie, this Malcolm Rodriguez, this you're all over the place. Kapogba is that guy for West Virginia. He's got 37 tackles, 19 rushing stops, 15 targets. He's the no position guy. He's the everywhere guy. He's the guy that TCU's going to have to figure out how to account for in any given situation.
Okay, can I give you a pushback on that? Is that Kapogba has been targeted 15 times, has allowed 14 catches for average yards per catch of 14.8 yards.
I didn't say he was as good as Malcolm Rodriguez or Jalen Petrie. I just said he was that guy.
I think there is exploitation to be had.
Yeah, he's going to be kind of the linchpin, like how the defense is set is going to relate to where he is on the field. And so I think that's really important. The one thing that I think that relates to the missed tackles is Neil Brown said, and I quote, we had trouble with screens against Texas Tech. Texas Tech, 28% of their dropbacks were screens, 6.5 yards per attempt allowed against Texas Tech. TCU on the season, 27.5% screens, 27.5% of their passes have been screens, and 7.5 yards per attempt. So if you're bad at covering screens, Darius Davis and Quentin Johnston in your business is not going to help that at all.
Garrett Riley loves himself a bubble screen, and I think we're going to see a heavy dose of that
against West Virginia. When the numbers are there.
Look, and also, like, it's not that the safeties are offering much help either. Aubrey Burks and Marcis Floyd, I think is how you pronounce his name, both allow over 50% receptions when on the targets, 12.5 yards per reception for Burks, 13.0 yards for receptions for Floyd. There's not a lot of help on the back end for West Virginia either. And it's not a defense that I would say is opportunistic. They've only picked off 2 passes this year. So it's not like a, oh yeah, we'll allow some big plays, but we'll cause some turnovers too. No, they're not doing that either.
Yep. One other thing to note on my end, 107th in ECHL rate for West Virginia's defense, 127th points per ECHL. Grant, when you create a scoring opportunity against West Virginia, you're averaging 5.05 points per scoring opportunity. That is 127th in the nation. That is not good at all. West Virginia's defense is also average starting field position of 29.5. That's 67th in the nation. TCU, for reference, 31.8 is 27th best in starting field position. So TCU is going to get shorter fields. TCU is going to be able to create quality possessions, and West Virginia is not very good at finishing them.
Yeah, I don't see a way this defense slows down the TCU offense, and I'm sure that's monkey paw curls, something bad is going to happen, but I think this is an opportunity for TCU to put up points in relative comfort on Saturday.
It's the West Virginia game, and it's in Morgantown, so Lord knows. But generally, this should be a game where TCU is able to really push this defense. I will say nothing. This has no ramification on whether TCU is going to beat Texas Tech or the relative quality of those two teams. I will say TCU on offense has more and better weapons than Texas Tech.
Yeah.
We saw what Texas Tech was able to do with absolute garbage ball, junk ball. 76% of yards came after the catch. West Virginia, my God, I tweeted out some screenshots. It has to be their worst defensive performance ever. It was so bad. And they're just, I mean, there's five guys around a Texas Tech player and then he scores. It's just, I mean, it was.
It's the missed tackling. They don't know how to tackle.
They don't know how to tackle. Part of me here is getting angry because I thought I took West Virginia last week. I trusted them. I said, dude, they're going to be. And on the merit, if they'd have made a couple of tackles, if they'd have kicked a couple of field goals instead of getting nothing on a couple of those drives, this could have been a closer game. And it was not. They absolutely, absolutely lost it.
Is this the part where I ask you to apologize for West Virginia?
No, West Virginia needs to apologize for itself.
I don't know. You know what? They beat Baylor, and we can chalk that up as a win.
Grant, Parker, when an 8-year-old gets behind the seat of a
no,
car.
No, we're not doing that. Because you're the 8-year-old in this scenario. You're the 8-year-old that
exactly.
West Virginia.
West Virginia is yelling at me, drive, kid. It's their fault. I blame Neil Brown. I don't blame me.
Do you want to do listener predictions first, or do you want to do our best case, worst case?
Let's do best case, worst case, because we did it last week, and yeah.
Okay. I'll go. You know what? Let's start best case. I think this can be a blowout. I think this can be... Look, JT Daniels has some weapons, but I think the TCU defense is finally going to start a game hot as opposed to, you know, giving up 21 points in the first 20 minutes and then adjusting. I think this can be 45-10 TCU pretty easily, best case.
I agree. I'm looking up the full games list page just to see the biggest margin of victory for either team. 2018 was 47-10 West Virginia. I remember that very distinctly. 34-10 was another big one. TCU won 40-10 is their biggest margin of victory in 2015. I think that this could be one of those games that's very one-sided. TCU over 40, West Virginia under 20. Just very boring, very clean. Get out early. Let's run the ball. Let's go home. Imari DeMercado have all the carries that you want in the second half. That kind of a game is TCU's best case scenario.
Is God bless Imari DeMercado. He is a fine running back.
You will not see many
completely fine.
You will not see many 28-year-olds with 3 degrees have better careers than that was probably mean. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Worst case, there is a way TCU loses. We've seen them do it to West Virginia several times. I mean, I think it'd be ugly. I think it'd be more of a no offense does anything right, 20-17 West Virginia game. It would have to be a complete slugfest, slog for West Virginia to win. But there certainly is a world where that happens.
A West Virginia win is like 100% 24-22. Just sucks. It just sucks.
What's your actual prediction here? I'm going to make you go first, then I'll go.
My actual prediction here, I like my numbers a little bit. I think I said on the Kuz's Corner podcast this week, TCU 38, West Virginia 30. That's a win and a cover for TCU. I feel like that's a little conservative for what I feel in my heart. My numbers have this about 41 to 34, so about 7 with some rounding generally. But I think that TCU gets the win and the cover here, 38-30. And West Virginia makes it annoying. More... If West Virginia scores 30, okay. That's very annoying. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredibly annoying. I'll be a little more optimistic and say it's 41-24. But it's like a, you know, 28-17 game going into the fourth, and it's super weird. But yeah, 41-24 would be my official prediction. Do you want to get some listener predictions in here, Parker?
Yeah, let's do it. We got a couple here. I asked for score prediction, offensive MVP, defensive MVP, and the best country song that references West Virginia or Cole. Either one I would accept.
So let's talk about that for a minute. I think Charleston Girl is the best song about West Virginia.
Okay, counterpoint. Feathered Indians says looking over West Virginia, smoking spirits on the roof.
I know. I think Charleston Girl is a better song.
I agree. I disagree.
Okay, that's fine. What about Cole? It's not about West Virginia, but what's the... it's that old mining song. 16 Tons, I think, would be my pick for best song about Cole.
I was going to go Loretta Lynn, Coal Miner's Daughter, probably is up there.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the two. Okay, let's see. Matt Kofelt, he's a friend of the pod. I should know how to pronounce his last name, but I don't. TCU 38, West Virginia 17, avoiding Morgantown spookiness convincingly. Offensive MVP is Jared Wiley, as tight ends have become uncoverable in the Big 12. And the defensive MVP is someone whose name I don't know yet, has 3 tackles, maybe Nnamdi Obiazor. Cole song, Come All Ye Coal Miners. Have not heard of it. I have to give that a listen.
Panopticon, super- what is that? Interesting.
I don't know. I'm going to give that a dive. Super Frogs, Baby Mama, 35-21. The inverse of the 2019 season finale where we all died a little bit and the first Fire Gary chance occurred. Boy, I hope so.
I can't vouch for the Fire Gary chance, but whatever.
I cannot. I was in the press box and I don't know. I was in my ivory tower.
There weren't enough people there by the end of the game to cheer.
Yeah, Fire Gary. Also that. Everyone fled. The Uninformed Frog. 38-14, QJ and D and 16 Tons is the perfect Cole and West Virginia song. Like I said, Ray Cartwright, a fan of songs to sing when you're drunk, noted Arlington Heights alum John Denver's Country Roads. Which, yes. Now, here's the thing. It's not about West Virginia. It's about the western part of Virginia. as the TikTok
Someone
goes.
Tossed that in 40. There. That was very funny to watch again. Yeah.
41-37 TCU. Steve Avila, there you go, and D. Winters.
TCU released a hype video this week of, like, after the game last week and going around and talking to people. And at, like, 8 seconds in that video, Steve Avila just yells at the camera. Like, he doesn't say, I'm excited about winning. He doesn't say, go Frogs. He just looks at the camera and screams. And I loved it so much.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's the best. It's Always Sunny in Fort Worth, 38-28 TCU. Tommy at CRF51, 52-14. Hey, man, there we go. Offensive MVP, Kendra Miller. Yeah, defensive MVP, THT. Doug Anders, 48-24 TCU. Kendra Miller and Jamoy Hodges, song, Coal Miner's Daughter. Martine at Babip_God. Congratulations on your batting average on balls in play. 28-24 TCU, Kendra Miller, Josh Newton, Feathered Indians. Adam at TCU Lotus Leaves, 51-27, QJ, and the West Virginia offense is the TCU defensive MVP. The song, I'm a Ramblin' Man, by the great Waylon Jennings. Then two more, Kaysen Crosby says Old King Cole by Sturgill Simpson, a song I forgot about, but is certainly a heater. And Thomas, at Alfheim Thomas, Charleston Girl, is the best West Virginia / Cole song.
I like it. Generally positive overtures.
Our listeners are smart. I'll give them credit. They know what they're talking about.
I agree. Generally, I think they're smart folks. I'm feeling optimistic about this game, which makes me a little nervous. I'm not gonna lie.
You were so negative going into Kansas State. So it makes me happy that you're nervous.
Grant, didn't you hear if TCU didn't maliciously injure Adrian Martinez and kick him out of the game, Kansas State would have won by 20. Can I tell you a satisfying thing? We're at the end of the podcast. That's okay. I blocked probably 30 accounts on Saturday night, not over the TCU thing, but just over, like, if you're going to look at me and say F you, like, if you're just going to tweet F you at me or call me a curse word, like, I don't have to see that. You're not entitled to me having to see that, right? So it's just, that's an auto block. That's fine. I blocked about 30 accounts, and by Saturday morning was up like 150 followers from where I was after I blocked those accounts. So it's a very gratifying feeling to be like, hey, I can just block morons and still do well on Twitter.
My favorite thing is that the guy you mentioned last week that you blocked, it turned out to be a friend of mine that I'd met, and he like told our mutual friends, like, yeah, I screwed up, and he
reached out. That was good. He reached out.
I know he did. But this is
not extremely required. Funny. I don't have a pay for play scheme, but what he did is he bought me a beer through my site, and then he used that comment to say, "Hey, I'm this Twitter account. I was very drunk last night. I did not mean it. That was very dumb of me. Sorry." I was like, "That's great. All is fair. That's fine."
Yeah, he was housed on Blood and Honey's watching his Oklahoma State Cowboys lose, and decided to take it out on Parker.
And I said, he deleted the tweet. I said, all is forgiven. It's no big deal.
It's all good. It's just, God, it made me laugh. Okay, let's do a little bit of a whip around here of the Big 12 and the top 25, Parker. We'll start with Oklahoma at Iowa State. Oklahoma's a 1-point favorite. I think this is a get-right game for Oklahoma. Give me the Sooners here.
Okay, so I have the numbers have Iowa State by 3 because we're including two games where Oklahoma was just very bad because they didn't have Dylan Gabriel. If Matt Campbell can't win this game, at some point, I mean, I know what they're supposed to be this year, but it's like, dude, how do you just keep losing this game? Did you see this week where he said they've been very successful at special teams?
And special teams? I did see that, yeah.
My God. I'm not going to bet on Iowa State, but they should win this game on the merits.
There's a great Tyler I Am Trill Withers tweet where it's just lying and then the greater than symbol. And that's what I wanted to quote tweet that Matt Campbell statement with. It's like, we've been great at special teams. Isn't lying fun? Oklahoma State is a 1.5-point dog at Kansas State. It's going to be a juicy game. I'm going to take Oklahoma State here, especially because I don't know Adrian Martinez's status for this game.
I think that Oklahoma State should win here. Adrian Martinez might not play. They're pretty banged up. And also, I think that Oklahoma State is just on a really good, weird mojo vibe right now.
Yeah. Then Texas Tech is a 2.5-point favorite hosting Baylor. Am I taking all road teams this week? I think I might. I think I have Baylor here beating Texas Tech.
That seems weird to me. That seems like an overreaction. Texas Tech being a favorite seems like an overreaction.
Yeah.
So generally for the uninitiated, home field advantage is going to be about 2.5 points. So if you see somebody as a 2.5-point favorite, that means, hey, it's a toss up on a neutral field. I do not believe that is the case. I believe that Baylor should win this game.
Yeah. Going nationally, Ohio State is a 15.5-point favorite at Penn State. That is a lot of points. I would not bet this game, but if you held a gun to my head, I would take Ohio State.
Ohio State is a flying death machine. I'm declaring it. They are.
Yeah.
They can beat anybody by any number any week.
Yep. The only other ranked matchup, Tennessee is a 12-point favorite hosting Kentucky. I like Tennessee. Kentucky's going to make it ugly.
Right?
I like Kentucky to cover, but Tennessee to win.
That's a lot of points, man. That's a whole lot of points.
It's a lot of points. Kentucky's a fine team. No other games that are – well, I like Syracuse being a 2.5-point favorite hosting Notre Dame is very funny to me. Literally anything in the world could happen in that game. But give me Syracuse because it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, we understand what Syracuse is now. We're not making crazy claims, and we can just enjoy them for who they are, and beating Notre Dame is very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Ole Miss is a 2-point favorite at Texas A&M. I think I have to pick Ole Miss here. I think A&M doesn't know what to do on offense, and it's hilarious, but it's also very concerning.
Yeah, A&M is just, I mean, A&M is like a portrait into our bureaucratic hellscape of a future as the government continues to encroach on daily life, because you're entrenched and you just can't do anything about it. You're like, dude, we have Jimbo and this money and we can't fix this problem and we're just going to have to deal with it. It's devastating. It's funny, but it's going to happen to all of us, so.
It's you've seen a few good men. It's Colonel Jessup's like laughing in the courtroom, and Lieutenant Kathy goes, "Is this funny?" And he goes, "No, it's not. It's tragic." And that's A&M football. Yeah. Is this funny? No, it's not. It's really tragic.
Absolutely.
There are no other interesting games.
That's fair.
I do you have any that you're jacked about?
Well, I mean, I talk about football for 9 hours a week now. So
I know. So give me one. What's one you're interested in?
I think UConn could probably talk cover to me, against friend. Boston College.
Seven, boy, that got a lot bleak. That got a lot bleaker.
Seven and a half at home.
Tell me something you're interested in. I think UConn could probably cover against Boston College.
I took Wake Forest. I think Wake Forest and Louisville should be fireworks, should be a lot of points, but I think Wake Forest should whip their ass. So
Wake Forest is fun, dude.
Yeah, and they have like legitimately three NFL receivers. Like, that's incredible.
The over-under is only 64.
Yeah, I think they'll go over.
That's an over waiting to happen. Parker. There's nothing else to cover. This has been the Purple Theory Podcast.
Indeed.
My name is Grant McGalliard. You can find me on Twitter at Grant McGalliard. Spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. I was on the Voice of the Mountaineers podcast last night. Well, if you're listening to this, it came out Wednesday morning. Go listen to that. Those are two great guys. Had a lot of fun talking to them. He is Parker Fleming. He is at Stats of War on Twitter. He does the BetUS show. They just recorded their second episode of the week today, and you can find it when? And where?
YouTube, BetUS, NCAAF, or College Football Show. It happens at noon Central on Tuesday, Wednesday, and we cut up games and clips. There's a playlist on the website, on the YouTube channel, rather. If you don't want to watch the whole thing, you just want to find a specific game, we cut all those up. So that's up there. You can find that as well.
Sounds great. Thank you, as always, for listening. We greatly appreciate your listenership of the Purple Theory Podcast. And let's go ahead and beat the hell out of West Virginia. Parker, go Frogs.
Go Frogs.